Welcome to another message of hope from Gateway Church Australia. For more information or to contact us, please visit gateway.asn.au. Saying welcome home.
Oh, so young and so beautiful. And thank you, girls. You just sang the Spirit of God into this place. We want to finish up our series called With today. And we said right at the beginning that one of the great joys of my heart is to see people walking with Jesus on a daily basis and understanding how deep his love is for us. And the opposite of that is the great pain in my soul when I see people that maybe have stuck their toe in the water of the Christian faith but have never really experienced it for what it really is and can therefore walk away when things don't go well for them. And it's, I said at the beginning, it's a bit like going from A to B on a country road at night time. And, you know, you can be enjoying the drive, but when you look out the window, you don't see what's really there. If you go on that same road in the daytime, as we did in New Zealand recently, and we see this, and we see the beauty all around us, and that's what we desperately want for all of you people. For me, that's what I want for me as well, to understand the depth of the beauty of the faith. And we've been using this verse from Acts that says that when the people saw the courage of Peter and John, who were disciples of Jesus, and realized they were unschooled, ordinary men, they were astonished, and they took note that they had been with Jesus. I wonder how that looks for an everyday Gateway person. You know, I could say, you could put your own name into there, and, you know, I could talk about Jeff down the front here, and I could say that when his mates saw his boldness, his assurity, his generosity, and the grace of Jeff, people were astonished, but they took note that he walks with Jesus. And it makes a difference. I want that said about me. Beth talked last week about, so beautifully, about what it is like to live with Jesus, and she gave that lovely analogy of the table that Jesus has set for us and how his invitation is for us to sit at that table with him and just lock gaze. And we were in PNG, but I heard from several people that the Spirit was so strong in this place. But you know, the Spirit, the same Spirit is here every week, every single week. And the difference is not the songs, the music, the message. The difference is our hearts and whether we are prepared to open ourselves up to step into his power. So that's what I'm praying for us this morning, that we would open ourselves up to let this ever-abiding Spirit change us a bit today. And I want to dig a little bit deeper about what this whole idea of being with Jesus looks like in our everyday lives. And I want to talk about the big issues that we all face and that your friends and your family face. And those issues are these: fear, despair, and apathy. Apathy is like that, yeah, whatever. Got people in your life are like, yeah, whatever, people. And the opposite of those three, I believe, are faith, hope, and love. They are the hallmarks of people that walk with Jesus. So let's delve a little bit into those three things, shall we? First thing, we can live with fear or we can live with God in faith. We can live with fear or we can live with God in faith. You know, fear and control are really the basis of all human religion. And I'm talking religion here, not faith. A couple of years ago, we were doing a course on different religions in Australia, and we had the privilege of viewing, going through a Hindu temple, beautiful temple in Dandenong. And it was quite an experience. So I'd driven past them, but I'd never been inside. And I must admit that, you know, there were all these different sort of cubicles that had statues of different gods in there, and people were coming in and they were buying plates of food to give as offerings to these different gods. And I came away feeling very sad, because I realised that all of these people have a sense of fear that if they don't offer the right offering as often as they should, that their life will not go well. And it's this whole idea of trying to control the chaos around you. But, you know, people who are Christians can live with fear as well. You know, when we live under God's law, we have this fear that if we don't behave ourselves, that God's going to get us. Or we can live over. It's like, you know, I don't really need to do much except follow the great principles of the Bible, and then I'm going to be okay. You know, I'll control the chaos that way. People who live from God, it's like they're fearful that they don't have enough, that they'll never have enough, so they're constantly asking God to bless them, bless my business, bless me, I need more. And even people who live for God have this fear that if they don't accomplish enough for him, that somehow God is going to be disappointed with them. It's a bit like the older brother syndrome in the prodigal son story. And each of these just fail to take our fear away. And our attempts at control will never be enough. And it's like, instead of it producing peace and tranquility in our soul, which should be the mark of a follower of Christ, we sometimes feel like we're on a treadmill and the treadmill is getting faster and faster. That's happened to me in the gym when I've fiddled with the controls stupidly, and you know, and all of a sudden I'm doing this and afraid I'm going to get kicked out the other end. But that's what we can feel like in our Christian faith. But you know, when we walk with God, we have to accept that control is an illusion. We, on our own, cannot control anything. And there's a story that Jesus told in Luke 12, which is really quite powerful. And he says this: a wealthy landowner had a farm that produced bumper crops. In fact, it filled his barns to overflowing, and he thought, what shall I do now that every barn is full and I have nowhere else to store more? I know what I'll do. I'll just tear down those small barns and I'll build a massive barn that will hold all my grain and goods. Then I can sit back surrounded with comfort and ease and I'll enjoy life with no worries at all. The equivalent today is, oh, I've earned a lot of money. I'm going to consolidate all of my superannuation accounts, set up a massive one, put a whole stack more cash in there, and then I'm going to sit back and enjoy life. God said to him, what a fool you are to trust in your riches and not in me. This very night, the messengers of death are demanding to take your life. Then who will get all the wealth you've stored up for yourself? This is what will happen to all those who fill up their lives with everything but God. Ouch. Ouch. Jesus is telling us, if we think that we can control the chaos of our life, it's an illusion. But that's scary. That's really scary. I don't want to say to my grandchildren, don't worry, children, life is chaotic and you have no control over it. That's not a great message to pass on to your grandchildren. What is the alternative? I want to show you a little bit of video. Tell me. I want you to see who the hero is in this little bit of video. If you're anything like me, when I watch that bit of video, my eyes are on the guy on the right. Because he's the one that's doing the big swings and he's doing the twirls. But who's the real hero? The catcher. He can twirl and swing all he likes. But if he doesn't have a catcher, there is no act. You know, it's such a beautiful analogy of our relationship with God, because Everything depends on the fact that he will catch us. I can only fly freely. I can only let go of the fear in my life if I know that the catcher will catch me. So faith is actually the opposite of seeking control. It is surrendering control. It is surrendering control. So that's what I want to say to my grandchildren. Yes, the world looks chaotic, but you don't have to fear, because there is a God who is your eternal catcher, and he loves you. It says in 1 John, perfect love casts out fear. So when we understand that, when we have that faith in God, there is no room for fear. Life with God does more than promise to manage our fears. It can actually remove them, because when we walk with a loving Father, everything changes. Oh, I want to give you an example of this. Some of you may know the Sermon on the Mount, which is in Matthew chapter 6. It's one of Jesus' most famous pieces of teaching. Now, on the screen is just a summary of some of the teachings in the Sermon on the Mount. And this is what he's saying that a disciple of Christ looks like, what they can live like. So first, you know, be glad when people persecute you. We all good at that? You know, laugh when people persecute us? You can shine your light. You know, you can stand up for God no matter where you are. Now, obviously, murder is out of the question, but Jesus said, don't even get angry. Anyone been angry in the last 24 hours? The last 24 minutes? Live in peace with everyone, as far as it depends on you. Then it's, obviously, adultery is out of the question, but he's saying, don't even lust. Don't even look in a sexual way at another human being who is not your wife or husband. Don't even lust. Whoa. Don't repay evil with evil. Not only should you not repay it, but you should forgive and then go the next step and bless. Give generously without expecting a return. How are we going living like that? You can look at that list and say that is totally unattainable. Maybe you're hanging on to control and feeling like you can live like that if you just try hard enough, but you know you can't do it. And the Christian faith can sometimes feel like it's full of expectations you can't possibly reach. Now, let me tell you about a little girl named Bethany. Bethany is my daughter. When she was in primary school, she was quite a lonely little kid, which might surprise you because she's such a bright little button. And she was bullied. And sometimes her father would come and kidnap her at lunchtime, which he would not be allowed to do today. The police would be out after him. But he would come and he would get Beth at lunchtime and take her down to the milk bar and buy her a milkshake, and, you know, just so that she would feel a bit better and the dad was there for her. Now, I want you to imagine that you're that bullied child in the playground. And some of you were that, I'm sure. You feel on your own. You're fearful. You're protective of yourself. And when you're bullied, you either shrink back into the corner or you might lash out and try and protect yourself. You definitely don't want to stand up. You don't want to speak out. And if someone wants something of yours, you grasp it tightly. No, it's mine. Now imagine that same child walking through the playground with her loving dad. And he's tall. She can be bullied by kids and put down, but it's okay. I'm not afraid. I'm with him. You can do whatever you like to me, but I'm at peace because he's my home. He's my safe place. She can shine her light. She can stand out in the crowd without fear. Just look who I'm with. Just look at how he's changed me. I'm with him and I'm not ashamed. Someone wants to take something from her, and instead of holding it tightly, she's able to go, here, Have it. It's yours. I can give. I have this heart of generosity because my dad here, he just replenishes me day by day. So I can give. I thought this playground was a scary place, but it's not when I'm walking with my dad. I can let go and I know he will catch me. When we walk with Jesus, the lifestyle that Jesus talks about, it actually becomes possible, not through our power, but through the fact that we're walking with him. There's an amazing story about Martin Luther King Jr. You may know him, the American black preacher who headed up the movement in the States for equality of the races. And he, as he became more prominent in that movement, he was threatened more and more often. And there was one terrible night when it was sort of like the straw that broke the camel's back. The phone rang at 3 a.m, got out of bed. And the voice on the other end of the phone said, "You better be out of this town in 3 days, because if you're not, I'm going to put a bullet in your head and I'm going to kill your wife and children." Now, this was a moment of just of crushing fear for him. And he just collapsed at the kitchen table in tears. But he says he heard the voice of God so strongly saying to him, "Stand up. Stand up for righteousness. Stand up. Don't stop fighting." God was saying to him, "You keep flying, I will catch you." But of course, those of you who know your history will say, "But Marcy, a couple of years later, he died. An assassin's bullet took him down. Where was the catcher then?" Can I tell you, the catcher was very much there. Because a Christian's perspective on life is very different. And this is a fill-in for you. Life with God means that we treasure him. We treasure him above all else. So if we treasure the world and a long, comfortable life, then we're not living with God. And I know that Martin Luther King Jr. did not treasure the world and a long, comfortable life. Secondly, life with God means that our real life never ends. Our real life never ends. Despite what happens in this life, Jesus promised that we, those of us who are with him, will never die. And I believe Martin Luther King Jr. is not dead. And I believe I will shake his hand one day. You know what true death is? True death is separation from God. If what we treasure most can never be taken away from us, and if our treasure is the source of life itself, then what do we have to fear? Apostle Paul himself said, "For me to live is Christ, and to die is gain." Living with God means replacing our fear with faith. So let's talk about hope. We can live in despair, or we can live with God in hope. We can live with despair, or we can live with God in hope. Now, hope is the opposite of despair, but when we see this random, chaotic universe, it's easy to slip into despair and feel like there's no purpose. We're all hearing recently about the fact that the depression rate amongst teenagers is just going up and up. And the studies seem to be saying that that's the result of two things. One is social media, but the other one is the constant messages they're getting about climate change. Not that it's a bad thing that we're hearing about climate change, but that some of these kids, they're getting this idea that there will not be a world for them to grow up in. That this universe is so chaotic that who knows what's going to happen. But hope is the conviction that despite what we see and experience, everything has meaning. There is order and purpose and direction in this supposed chaos, and there is a storyteller who is bringing this story to an ultimate culmination. And that is so unique in the Christian worldview. But you know, most people believe that hope is found through things that in their life, things that are important to them. Now, I read a story about a young man who was studying to be a psychiatric nurse. And he heard the statistic that one of the biggest groups for suicide is actually aged people. And he wondered why that was. So his teacher took him through this exercise. He got him to write up on a board all the things that gave his life hope in the future. So I wonder whether you would write a similar list. You know, his wife, his kids, his health, important things. He loves his job, entertainment, loves movies, loves travel. Exercise is important to him, helps him keep his health, and of course sport, toys. He's got a motorbike, nothing like being out on the motorbike. And probably the last thing he wrote down was his house. All of these things, he said, gave his life hope and meaning. So the teacher then said to him, okay, let's have a look at what happens as people get older. They retire or they lose their job. So that's gone. If you lose your job, then you probably have to sell off your toys because you can't afford to keep them anymore. And maybe travel is over. And if you get, as you get older again, your health, you struggle with your health, that's gone. And without that, you can't exercise. Sport becomes a thing of the past. And maybe entertainment, you know, your eyes are not good, so you can't even watch a movie anymore. And of course, your house is gone. And you love your kids and your kids love you, but one of them's moved to London and the other one's moved to Canada, chasing career, so they're gone. And then for this gentleman, his wife went before he did. He said, is it any wonder that when our hope, and they're all good things, is it any wonder that we can be in trouble when our hope is based on that? You know, my dad, he's over 90 now, he's in an old people's home. And some could say that he's in this position, although his wife is still alive, but some could say he's lost everything. I go to visit him and he's sitting in his wheelchair, just sleeping. Not much happening in his day. But he worships and he prays. You could say he'd lost everything, but my dad walks with Jesus. He has lost nothing. And his hope is not based on anything. It's based on Jesus. It's not our circumstances or behaviours or radical decisions that give our life meaning and hope, but it's our friendship with God himself. And what brings a person value and significance is not what they do, but with whom they do it. So the call to live in continual communion with God means that every person's life, no matter how mundane, even a 90-year-old sitting in a chair in an old people's home, every person's life can be elevated to sacred heights, and the fullness of Christian life can be lived anywhere and in any circumstance because God is with us. So, life with God, a couple of fill-ins. Life with God means we do not have to upend our lives and seek a radical existence in order to have true intimacy with God. He wants to be with you now, wherever you are, whatever you are doing. And secondly, life with God means that even if our circumstances crash, our hope can remain intact. Faith and hope. What about love? We can live with apathy, or we can live with God in love. It says in the Bible, even faith and hope will one day fade, but love will never end. We've been talking about walking, being with Jesus. But you are not going to want to be with Jesus unless you love him. How do you step into love with God? That's a really interesting question because it's a supernatural thing. I think prayer has a lot to do with it. Just, you know, times when we just talk to the creator of the universe and allow him to just breathe on us. I think worship's important. So important to be in the community of God, worshiping together and to feel his presence here. I think reading his love letter, the Bible, is so important. They are ways that we can step into this love. But really, it's an unexplainable experience to feel the love of God. And I think ultimately, the thing that helps us to fall in love with Jesus is to know how much he loves us. And I was reading a scripture this week that I've read many times, and as God often does, all of a sudden he'll put a pilot light on something and give me a new perspective. But in the book of Hebrews, the writer says this: let us throw off everything that hinders and the sin that so easily entangles, and let us run with perseverance the race marked out for us, fixing our eyes on Jesus, the pioneer and perfecter of faith. And here's the sentence: for the joy set before him, he endured the cross. For the joy set before him, he endured the cross. Now, I have read that many times. You can take that one off. Thanks, mate. I've read that many times, but I had this image. I could imagine Jesus nailed to the cross and suffering in pain and agony, but it's like there's this joy he can see in the future. And I used to think, well, that joy's got to be when all of this pain is over and he's resurrected and he is in heaven and he's sitting at the right hand of the Father and the whole of creation is under his feet. I thought that is the joy that he saw when he was on the cross. But you know what? He already had all that. He didn't have to go through the cross in order to have all that. He already had it. You know the one thing he didn't have when he was hanging on the cross? You. He didn't have you. He was doing what he did in order to show you how much he loves you. So let's see what that verse looks like in the Passion Version, and the second one, thanks. We look away from the natural realm and we fasten our gaze onto Jesus, who birthed faith within us and who leads us forward into faith's perfection. His example is this: because his heart was focused on, what's it focused on? The joy of knowing that you would be his. He endured the agony of the cross. That is how much Jesus loves you. And until you get a revelation of that in your heart, I don't think you'll ever be able to step into that love. Because once we have that, it gives us the power to love ourselves and overflow into the love of other people. which is our aim as followers of Christ. So life with God means that his love fills me with love for myself and for others. You know, no one can make you fall in love with God. No one can make you walk with him. But can I just say this? If you can find something else in your life which is worthy of giving your whole self to, something that will give you a sense of ultimate purpose and direction outside of Jesus Christ, then you take that. You take that. But I can only say I have found nothing in this world that compares to my friendship with him. I'm with him. For me to live is Christ, and to die is gain. Those of you who were here the very first week, you can take that, thanks, Jeff, will remember that I read you a couple of stories about different people who were living this way, and I wondered if we could very quickly have a look at those stories again and how they might change if people were living with God. So the first one we had was David. David is a savvy intellectual, believes in God, but as to a personal connection with him, not really. Believes that God created the world, set it in place, put some principles there, and all he has to do is follow the principles, but day to day, very little thought of God. What happens when David moves here? David is a savvy intellectual who has examined the evidence for a personal God, but he has moved from just an intellectual knowing to a heart knowing. He is taking Jesus with him into every part of his life, and now the principles he lives by flow out of that tender relationship that he has with Jesus. Karen, do you remember Karen? Mum with a teenage son. She's distraught because her son is struggling with drugs and alcohol. And she's here. She's saying to God, I did everything right bringing that kid up. This was not supposed to happen. She's moving here. Karen is learning to walk with Jesus, and hourly she is releasing her troubled son into his hands. She is filled with hope that the same Jesus that holds her also holds her boy in the palm of her hand. Then we had Jack, who's the successful businessman, but he's in the pastor's office. He describes himself as a Christian, but he has problems with gambling. And he's got himself into trouble now, and he's confessing to the pastor because he believes if he doesn't confess, then God is not going to bless his business anymore. He's living from God. What happens when he moves here? Jack has had to work through some of the beliefs he had about God and knows that Jesus is for him, that he is loved even in the middle of his addictions. Jack is working on his problems, not so that God will love him, but because he now knows that God already loves him and wants his life to flourish. And then finally we had Rebecca. Rebecca is a year 12 student, very smart girl. She's really passionate about doing law and becoming a barrister, but then she thinks, no, I shouldn't be doing that. I want my life to really count for God, so I'm going to leave the dream of law and I'm going to go to Africa and work in an orphanage. She's living for God, feeling she has to do stuff for him in order for him to love her. What happens when she moves here? Rebecca is learning that what Jesus wants is her, not what she can do for him. And she's resting in that knowledge. She knows that if she walks with Jesus, her life will overflow with significance and influence, regardless of what sphere she chooses, whether it be the law or whether it be mission work in Africa. What's the action point for us, Gateway, after this series of 4 weeks? One of the things I'm praying is that we will keep these pictures in our mind. I know for me it's helped to alert me when I find my thinking is not right. And I have to keep remembering this is where I need to be. Thanks, Jeff. Perhaps for you it's an issue of fear. Maybe there are things in your life that you are really keeping a strong control of, thinking that you can control the chaos, but you can't do it. I'm praying that today will be the day that you step into a new relationship with Jesus. We're going to finish with just one song. Take My Whole Heart. We've been singing it for a couple of weeks. Maybe today is the first time that you'll sing this, just not just the words, but allow your spirit to sing this as a prayer as we learn to walk with Jesus.